Effective SEO management, how it's important today to manage a team to get results. I remember many years ago, 10 years ago, I didn't have a team because one specialist can provide all job to write content, to submit content, to promote content, and Google ranked well. Today, it's not because it's hard. We need to pay attention to quality. That's why I'm so excited to discuss this topic with Alex Pennant. How are you?
Good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, big pleasure. I remember all these valuable insights from our first episode. Yeah, I spent some time in the emergency room to learn to consume all this content, so how to improve my efforts. Today, I'm excited a lot more because I know how it's important to be a manager, because I can feel that I'm jack of all trades, you know, because I need to understand all topics and manage the team. Alex, before we start, just tell more about yourself, experience, background, about your new book that you published in November, because I love reading books. It's my loving format. And I spend so much time by reading books, more than blog posts and any other type of content, because I get more value, more knowledge. So more about you and your book.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah. So I've been involved in the digital space for a very long time. I started my first company in 1997, T35 Hosting, which was one of the first web hosting providers, which is, I don't even want to count the years, how many years it's been. And then I started Smart Sites with my younger brother 12 years ago now, which is a full service digital marketing company. We do website design, SEO, SEM. We have over 400 employees now. We double in size every 18 months. So in 18 months, we'll be at 800. And I think last we spoke, I forget when it was, I think we spoke like a year ago, we were still at 300. So we're always growing, always looking for ways to do things better, more efficiently, and grow the company. And thank you for the intro of the book. Today, actually, April 25th, my book came out on automotive search marketing. So it's SEO and SEM, or SEO and pay-per-click, depending what industry you're in, you'll call it differently. It's automotive specific, but as you know, SEO is SEO, every industry. And as my company Smart Sites is industry agnostic, and I speak at conferences in every industry, it always surprises people that it's the same SEO, right? At the end of the day, if you're doing things correctly, if you are doing the link building, the content creation, right, it's all like, it could be for a dealership, it could be for a dentist website, that then they creating unique, valuable content, link building, all of that is the same. So the book itself is automotive specific, but it's I think anyone reading it will get some value out of it. And it's a real book. Physical copies haven't arrived yet, so I don't have it in front of me, but it's 250 pages. So it's a real book. It's not like a pamphlet.
Nice. Love it. So I'm going to read this book. But, you know, before I do it, can you give a strong reason for me, for my audience, to read this book? Because, you know, let me tell why I'm asking about that. Because I found many business books are great for sleeping. You know, when you have problem with sleep, you can take a new book, read it, sleep well. You don't need medicine, pills, anything. Just take a new boring book. But some books are great. For example, when I read books from Josh Sugarman, Seth Godin, you know, I can feel that I'm part of this book. I can forget about sleep. I can forget about meal, about water, because I love this content. It's not boring. And once I spoke with Jim Edwards. He worked in Business Insider 10 years. Then company was sold for $500 million. And he told me the success of Business Insider depends on creating non-boring content. So business is boring, but they found the way how to create non-boring content. Can you tell what kind of benefits can I get and my audience can get by reading your book? And what kind of value can we use in our SEO strategy?
Yeah. Very good question. So this is all new to me, right? The public speaking I do, I started only a couple of years ago, it's all personal development, right? So I kind of figure things out as I go along. I can't promise it's not going to be boring, right? To my wife keeps saying that all the stuff I write is boring to her at the very least. The reason that I think it's super valuable is as I am with everything I write about, all the public speaking I do, and really our company values, it's all about transparency. So in this book, first of all, I go through my interpretation of what Google ranking signals are, right? That's always always super, super valuable. And I feel like very rarely talked about in the SEO industry. It's always like the SEO agencies, the way they talk to clients and prospective clients is, oh, we'll do some mystery stuff and your traffic will go up, right? Here I go through literally what I feel like are Google's ranking signals, Google's algorithm. My interpretation of all this other data of all these SEO communities themselves internally evaluating ranking signals, right? So aside from being like the algorithm engineer at Google, I think it's the best view you're going to get into Google's ranking signals. Of course, I wrote it 6 months ago, so it was before the Yandex code base was released and whatnot, which itself I think gives a lot more clues to Google's algorithm. But aside from that, I think that's the best view you're going to get of what's important to Google. Obviously, it's always a moving target, and what was important to Google this year won't be next year, right? But at this point in time, I think it's as close as you're going to get. So I think that in itself is super valuable. And then I talk about exactly what we do for clients, and I even give some hypotheticals of this client has this budget, and fully transparent, this is exactly what we do. And when we do work with clients as an agency, we do the same thing. Our SEO, we sell hourly. So you buy a block of hours, and then we use those hours on your behalf to do content, link building, literally all the best practices. So in this book, I outline all of it, just like we do as a company. And if someone wants to go out and do all those things themselves, they're more than happy for them to do so, right? If they want us to help with some of that, we're happy to help. But it's if there's anything in what I speak about and what our company does and what I write about, is that it's full transparency. We lay out everything. There's no mystery. There's a lot of like bad publicity in SEO. Then you don't know what people do and black hat. And this is exactly what we're gonna do. And that's what the book outlines. This is exactly, if it was my small business that I was doing SEO for, this is exactly what I would do. I also have a full chapter that I lay out the differences between hiring an agency and doing it in-house, which I think is also on the mind of a lot of people, right? For maybe it doesn't make sense for like a three-person company, but let's say you have 40, 50 employees. At that point, maybe it does make sense, right? So I lay out that if you wanted to do full-blown digital, so not just SEO and the paid side, PPC, what are the positions you would need internally to be filled? And you could have one person do all the positions if you find that magic person, right? But I literally lay out, and I think I have, like 30 pages of like, this is all the stuff that goes into doing correct SEO and SEM. So I think it's those things, and I can't promise it's not going to be a boring read, right? But at the very least, it's very honest, and it's what I hoped was a summary of my experiences in the last 20, 25 years of doing that for our business and for thousands of clients.
Nice, nice. Okay, guys, I submit this book in the description, so you can find it. And Alex, I have the question about your growth. You mentioned that you hired 2 times more employees. Today I often see some articles, posts about recession. And companies like Amazon, Google, lay off, people, yes. Twitter. Of course, Elon Musk can do it. But, but you grow. Can you tell how you do it? When we don't know what kind of future will be, this recession, this war in Ukraine, sure. We don't know about the economy. So any tips how to grow in possible recession?
Very good question. So I think the big companies are doing the layoffs, the Facebook, Google, Microsoft, right? And we as a company, SmartSites, and me personally have a very good relationship with all three of those, probably a little bit better with Google, Microsoft, and Facebook, but we have calls with them weekly and with their executives, and it's been very unfortunate the amount of layoffs they had. I think the reason they're doing layoffs is not necessarily because a recession's coming, and it might be coming, right? But I think all these companies overhired during COVID times, right? And if you Google it, there's actually charts of how many people and they like way overhired. Like Facebook, all these articles are coming out on Facebook that there's people that were there for like the last year or 2 years doing nothing, right? They had people that are now coming out on social media and like, hey, I've been getting paid by Facebook. I've done nothing. I haven't signed on to my computer in 2 months, right? So I think they just overhired. So it's not necessarily that they're, recession's coming, let's lay off. I think they just way, way overhired. For us, we do it for a couple of reasons, but it's for sure very risky, right? When COVID started, more than half of our clients stopped paying us or start paying us less. We don't have like the margins to be able to sustain that. Still, we didn't do any layoffs. We actually gave all employees a bonus to be able to set up their home offices and really get themselves able to work efficiently, effectively from home. And we actually hired, and we hired a lot of really great people because other companies were laying off. For sure, it cost us a lot of money and we lost a lot of money. It was very risky, but ultimately I do believe in digital and the importance of digital, right? So we do continue to make those investments. I think there's always headwinds. COVID was a huge, huge one. Recession coming, let's say it's 50-50, right? Aside from recession, I think there's all these other headwinds now from ChatGPT, from AI content, right? From a lot of people saying that with ChatGPT and search going away, do you even need a website, let alone doing SEO, right? So for sure, a lot of risks. And as our payroll now, I pay millions per month on payroll. We spend $400,000 a month on our own marketing. So for sure, huge risks we take. But I think ultimately we do it because I do believe in the future of digital. I think there's still a lot of people not taking advantage of it, right? Even the small businesses, we're still getting like the roofers, the plumbers, the people that you think would have a website, but they still don't. The final holdouts, right? If anything, COVID pushed a lot of those people into digital. If you think about like the stores in the mall, like selling like jeans in the mall, right? They never needed a website. They're like, I'll never need a website in my life. Restaurants, they're like, I never need to do a website, social media, I don't need to do anything. COVID hits, all of a sudden, if the restaurant's not on social media and is not doing all this creative marketing to actually deliver the product, because no one's coming to restaurants, right? So now they have to have a website, have a social media presence. So I think if anything, that keeps pushing us. I think there's still opportunity. I think digital is still super, super important. Other than people not in digital yet, like the holdouts, right? You still have a lot of people that now are running 10-year-old websites, and it becomes more and more important, right? If Amazon taught us anything, is that consumers now have less and less patience, right? They need frictionless experiences. They need everything to be smooth. They need everything to be consistent. If your marketing is talking about some offer and you click it and it doesn't land to a landing page, it looks exactly the same and talks about that same offer, the consumer's not gonna buy it. They're gonna think it's a scam, right? So I think there's still huge, huge opportunities. And for us, I'll tell you, the main reason we grow, and right, it's so much easier not to be like, we're good now, we're very efficient, we have all the positions, because every growth is very, very difficult. And as we've done it for 12 years, every step is I don't wanna say more difficult, but different, right? Growing from 10 employees to 20 is a lot different than 300 to 400. It's completely, completely different challenges. The reason we do it is, first of all, economies of scale help a lot, right? The bigger we are, the more value we could drive to our clients. But I think the most important one is opportunities for employees, right? If you stay the same size, no matter what industry you're in, if you keep the status quo, what winds up happening is the only way your employees start developing themselves, like career development, personal development, right, is if someone gets fired, quits, or dies, right? And that's how it works in a lot of traditional companies. Like if you think about law firms, right? How does a lawyer become a partner of the law firm, right? You have to wait it out until one of the partners like retires or dies, right? Yeah. You don't want to create that atmosphere. So by continuously growing, we're creating opportunities for employees to learn new things, to if someone wants to become a manager of the department, if we're not growing, they don't have that opportunity. So that's really why we keep pushing the growth aspect. But for sure, there's risk all over the place, right? I don't know. With ChatGPT, people could stop using Google search completely, right? Not even completely. If 10% less people use Google search, it would be catastrophic to Google and to the SEO SEM industry, right? So there's always a lot of waves, but it's you just gotta do your best to overcome them. I think no matter what industry you're in, even if you're not in digital, right? If you're a dentist or whatever, there's always challenges. There's always ups and downs. You just gotta keep investing in the company, gotta invest in your reputation, your company's reputation, gotta invest in your employees, especially for people like me and a lot of the people who watch your podcast who are in the service businesses, right? They're not, I don't produce like a widget, like I don't make pens, right? Like my service is my employees. So my employees providing value to clients. So that's why I do it, but for sure risk jumped tremendously. And I wrote my book in November, isn't that correct? So I wrote my book in November. It finally is published. Today is the official day it's launching. It's going to be in Barnes & Noble's, all the stores soon, I hope. When I wrote my book, ChatGPT didn't exist. Is that crazy?
Yeah.
It literally did not exist when I wrote the damn book. And by the time it's published, it's like obsolete now because ChatGPT changed so much stuff. So definitely very, very rapid change. I think more important than risks of recessions, I think, is all the AI change that really has been like the last 3 months, I want to say.
Nice, nice. Love it, love it. You remind me Mark Zuckerberg, who said the biggest risk is not to take the risk. You know,
yes, so
we need to take the risk.
Especially love it. Like industries like digital or digital agencies, SEO, like the industries we're in. Like if you're like a dental practice with like a very solid base of like customers who have been coming to you for 30 years, right? You don't expect as much change to be happening, right? But in our industries, it's, if anything, it's been a little too quiet, right? Like before ChatGPT, if you think about it, the last 3 years, 5 years, maybe even, and SEO has been like very quiet. Like there's always algorithm changes and different things are more valuable than others, but there hasn't been dramatic change, right? You're creating quality content, you're doing link building, you're doing technical SEO for the last 5 to 6 years. Like that formula has really stayed very, very, very much the same. You want to avoid doing bad risky things, of course. But aside from that, it's been a little bit too quiet. So now you're seeing the rapid change. You have all of a sudden Sergey Brin is back at Google. I don't know if you heard. He was at an OLDEC meeting. I remember before he even was on a news site, it was end of January. I think all of a sudden, like he's like on email chains that I'm on. I'm like I thought he's on like an island, retired somewhere. Like I'm like, am I seeing something? So it's he's back now. So it's huge. It's I think it's potential to be nothing and just go away, like the whole ChatGPT AI stuff, right? Could get banned, right? But potential to really be existential threat to Google and really change a lot of things. So it'll be interesting to see how the next 3 to 6 months look.
Yeah, nice, nice. Yeah, I think digital marketing is a quickly changing world, and you know, I think it's impossible to find the best time to publish a book because, you know, it doesn't matter. Before ChatGPT,
I found the worst time though.
Before Yandex leak, you know, by the way, when I check out all this Yandex leak, I didn't find one thing that Yandex shares everything with Putin, with his team, you know. So all the rest were leaked, but not this information. And yeah, I think, you know, when I read books from Seth Godin, Josh Sugarman, they wrote these books like 40 years ago, before digital, but I still get a lot of valuable insights that I can use in digital. It doesn't matter because I think technologies change the world, but not human psychology. People are the same, you know, so we need to adapt technologies to human psychology. And Josh Sugarman, when I wrote his book, How to Retain Audience, how to give a strong reason to consume until the end. You know, yeah, I think I can use it today to create content that people want to consume. And for example, in our course, we spent so much time by creating lessons about high quality content, how to create high quality content. And I found some influencers. I don't know. Once I spoke with Bridget Heisen, she has plus 4 million followers on LinkedIn. She's well known. And she told me she doesn't know algorithms on LinkedIn. So she had a lot of followers, but many great influencers don't care about algorithms. They care about people because all algorithms created to satisfy user intent, to help people, to support them. And I found that companies who are not willing to learn about algorithms because they will change. But if you care about human, then you can satisfy algorithm as well. Yeah. Alex.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Sorry, just to add really quick. It's very interesting. I've seen for Seth Godin specifically, he has a lot of videos on YouTube. And I've seen a lot of videos. Like you said, the content is still so relevant that he has videos that are like from 2 years ago. You could see the published date, right? And he just changed, like it's like the video is like SEO strategy, and he puts in for 2023, right? The video was published like 3 years ago. It just changes the title to say 2023 because it is, you're right, a lot of things continue to be relevant no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Alex, I want to ask you about hiring. Can you tell how to hire, I don't know, like 400 people in 18 months? For me, it's really hard, you know, to find these people, to speak with them, to interview them, to know that these people can grow your company, help your customers. So any tips how you do it?
Yeah. So it's very tough. It's a hiring has been in the digital world has been very tough the last couple of years, I want to say. Pretty much as COVID started, but even a little bit before, it got a lot more difficult. I think if COVID has helped us with anything, is before we used to be very New Jersey centric, our offices in New Jersey. And now we hire like all over the US. I think that itself has helped us a lot. But I think the biggest thing that we did that really helped is hire an HR manager. So before that, hiring was a lot of it was on me and the rest was on the department heads. And it was, I feel like even doing the final interview or like setting them up in payroll was ultimately on me. And I was always the bottleneck. Like people would be, oh, we need to hire more people. I'm like, I can't. Next 2 weeks, I have no time free. I can't do it. Right. So I think ultimately giving up control, and just for us, again, we're just a different size, right? If we were a 10-person company, I wouldn't do it. But to be able to hire, like some weeks we hire 5, 6, 7 people in a single week, right? There's no way I would have been able to do that if we did not hire an HR department to be able to facilitate all of that. So for our size, that was the big thing. And it took me for a company of our size to finally hire an HR department. I think we were super late on it, right? It was crazy that we got by for as long as we did. We were at 300 employees or something with no HR person. So I think that was huge, but it all depends on the different levels. But it's all the hiring you do now is in through Indeed, although it's gotten more and more expensive, but it's still been the best way for us to hire. But for sure challenging. We've opening up nationally and hiring an HR person was our big aha moment in the last 12 months. But for sure it depends on your size. If you have 10 employees, you definitely want to vet people a lot more and be a lot more involved in the hiring because you have a lot less room for error, right? You're already like over capacity and you hire this person and you train them for 12 months and it turns out to be a bad hire, you're a lot worse off than for me that we have a PPC department of 30 people and we hire one person, it doesn't work out. It's not that big of a hit. So I think it's very dependent on different stages and different growth and different company sizes. But for sure, the hiring has been very, very tough. And I think it's only now getting a little bit easier. I think the last 3 years, almost every industry I've heard, it's been tough. Even like jobs like automotive technicians, right? Like even that's been like very hard. I think everyone has had a hard time hiring for what it's worth. But I think it's easing up a little bit now.
Nice. I have the question about management. I think, you know, okay, if you hire a lot of great people, but for example, personally, I can manage 10 people, 20 people. It's not hard to manage 10, 20 people to explain them what they need to do. But you wrote a book, you grew your agency. Can you tell how to do it? You know, I mean, like to manage 800 people, I think it's really hard to explain everyone what to do. Tell about structure of your company, how the process looks like.
Yeah, for sure. And sorry if you hear noise in my kid's bathroom upstairs is being renovated.
No worries about that.
You hear like something like crash over my head. That's what it is. So hopefully nothing physically comes flying down. So we're at 400 now. So that's when I talk about different challenges with different levels of growth. So the biggest challenge going from, let's say, 100 to where we are today, which we did over the last 3 years, let's say, has been creating management layers, right? Because when we doubled from 10 to 20 or 20 to 40 or 40 to 80, I still had a very good control in every part of the business, every department. We didn't need as much management in place. We've always been a very flat organization. But now that was the recent challenge of putting the right people in place in the right positions, letting them run the show, and pretty much having the team, myself and I run the business with my brother, having us to support that person. That becomes super important. So you become very, very dependent on the department heads, and you have to be very careful to hire the right people. Knock on wood, we've had very, very amazing people that have been with us. Some have been with us since we started the company. So I think when we get to the level we're at now, it's all about putting the right people in place and then giving them a lot of autonomy and a lot of control. And I think that second part is what's usually missed. So before Smart Sites, I worked at Publicis for a little bit. I was in charge of digital for Samsung and then for Walmart for 2 years, amongst other jobs I had. The Publicis job was amazing. It was one of my favorite places to be. So I really, nothing bad to say about it, but I just noticed from corporate jobs, even at Publicis, a lot of times they wouldn't give people, like the higher up management director positions, they wouldn't always give them full control, right? It was a lot of like, you could do just this and you have to submit this to this person for them to review and approve. And when you create a culture, and other jobs were, Publicis was very good. Some other jobs I've had, I did corporate finance at Toys R Us corporate, for example. The culture you create with that kind of micromanagement and not giving people enough control to really do their own things, try their own things, is I think where companies struggle. I think if you create the wrong culture, A, employees won't stay there for long, and B, you don't give people the opportunity to succeed. In our industry, where it's ever changing and you really have to be super, super agile, you really have to empower the people on the front lines, and not even just the department heads, right? All employees really need to empower them to be able to make, to drive change, to initiate change, right? Because they're the ones on the front line seeing what's working, what's not working, right? If you're like, oh, you're just a junior employee, I don't want input from you, right? That's how you fail. That's how companies become very slow to change and eventually go out of business. Like you have companies like Bed Bath & Beyond that's just in bankruptcy now, right? That was like a no-brainer. Toys R Us that I worked at, I left there because I also saw them going out of business, right? It's, if you create culture that does not really reward agility, change, give autonomy to employees, that's where you run into trouble. And again, it's not a 20 employee company, I don't think it's something you worry about, but I think once you're maybe 300 up, I don't know what the magic formula is, but that's something we've been, I don't want to say it's been a challenge for us, but that's what we've been working our way through recently. And there's a lot that goes into it, right? How to maintaining that culture where you're no longer physically in an office is very challenging, right? So there's a lot that goes into it, but I think that to me has been the key pieces to continuous growth.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. Love it. You mentioned a few times about this, autonomy, you know, you remind me another great guy, Steve Jobs, and he told that Apple doesn't hire people to teach them how to work. Apple hires them so these people can teach Apple how to work. So yeah, and can you tell about this autonomy? What does it mean? You mean like you gave them task what to do, but you rely on their experience to complete this job? Or you give them like Google. I know Google can share 20% of time to create own products. That's why we see Gmail, many other great products from Apple, Google, because all these products were created because of this autonomy. Any tips about that? How to
So we do it. Yeah, very good question. So we do it. We do it a little differently, although in somewhat similar ways. So my philosophy on that is, we give employees full autonomy. So we hire project managers who are probably a couple of years of experience. So they're in a lot of times, in a lot of cases, that's the amount of responsibility we give them is probably more than they've ever had at any other job, right? We give them literally all the responsibility. Here's your client, you manage the relationship, you manage this, you really give them full control. They almost like are an entrepreneur in themselves, right? We're as a company are very entrepreneurial, so they are their own entrepreneur. And then you have the entire team. So let's say the PPC team, right? The entire team is there to support them, right? So there's weekly meetings where everyone brings up an issue they have or something they need help with. We have several senior employees who have like open hours that's just 3-hour block that anyone can join, chat about anything. So we really empower people to have full control and really be an entrepreneur and almost run like their own business. And then we have the team in the company to support them, right? They run their own business, but we have an entire design team with 24 people when they need design stuff. We have a content writing team with 90 people when they need content, right? So they're an entrepreneur within the company with the resources of the greater company, and then the support of the team leads, and everyone else really in the company. So that's the way we structure. It's not for everyone, right? There's always going to be some employees that enjoy structure and oversight, right? Not everyone will succeed in the kind of environment that we have, but I think ultimately it is the best for people who are okay with it. And we find that a lot of the younger generation is more willing and wants to be more entrepreneurial, right? Very few of the younger generation, like people graduating a couple years ago, even graduating now, very few people want to go into a job and be like micromanaged, right? Where 30, 40 years ago is very common, right? You get a job in investment banking and accounting, whatever it is. A lot of times you know you're going to be micromanaged. You expect that, and it gives you some comfort knowing that like I can't mess up because this other person's going to check everything I do, right? So we do pretty much the opposite. So it's so far so good, knock on wood. Definitely a unique approach, but people tend to enjoy it and appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And again, the people who enjoy that kind of stuff, again, if you need to be micromanaged, the smart sites is not the place for you.
Yeah, nice. You know, Bill Gates said that the era of AI has begun. Now, okay, you publish a book, but we got AI, and I think all businesses, all companies need to adopt AI technologies, because it's not replacement for human being, but it will be replacement for someone who doesn't adopt AI, because competitors can adapt, can provide much better results, much better quality of products. So can you tell how your company adopt AI today, and can you advise for others who are listening to this podcast how to start learning about AI and adapt to their products?
Yeah, so very good topic. I've actually written a couple articles on it, and all of a sudden everyone's asking me to speak about it. So I just did a speech about it last week in North Carolina, and literally it's funny. Every single conference has been reaching out to me to come and talk about ChatGPT and AI, because it's a hot new topic, and there's really no experts in it, right? So it's been interesting. I wish I had a product to sell around, but because at all these conferences when we come talk about it, and then in the end I'm like, well, people are like, can you come to our company and train us in ChatGPT? I'm like, absolutely not. That's nothing close to what I do. So I think it's super, super powerful. Again, I don't think it's going to replace as many things as people think, but I think it's super, super useful for creating efficiencies. Even in my day-to-day, I have multiple monitors up. I have a monitor on the left side where I just have it on all the time, right? And it's super useful for me to organize things. Like if there's an article I need to read, I paste it in there and ask for it to summarize it, right? So it's almost like a 24/7 secretary or assistant, right? They're like that literally I could just toss it into. You could ask it to do research. You could say, can you act as a, I forget what prompt I use, as a technical journalist and research these three vendors and compare contrast them, right? Could do really cool things like that. It's very powerful for creating content. So website content, I wouldn't use as much, although Google came out and said they won't penalize for it, which was surprising to me, right? In my book, I put so my book predates ChatGPT, but it was coming. So I think I have a sentence somewhere saying that I think once it comes out, Google's gonna, because Google knows what's AI written. I thought Google's gonna flag it, and then like it'll say machine generated, right? Google came out and said, we'll treat all content equally. I'm like, are you kidding me? And of course they could change their mind. So for SEO content, I'd be very careful. We've run some tests and it does okay. It requires a lot of editing and a lot of due diligence. I wouldn't just take the content to go on your website, right? But aside from SEO content where it's questionable, where I think there's risk because Google could all of a sudden change their mind, right? And they know what's AI written. So that's AI content for SEO, I think, is the risky section. For all other type of content, it's not risky at all, right? Have it write your Facebook post, right? You could say that generate me four Facebook posts for with this kind of topic, and have a call to action in there. You could say, generate me 5 tweets for Twitter. And when you ask it to generate content for different social media, it'll actually generate differently. So when you ask for the Twitter post, it'll do it with hashtags. It automatically optimizes for every social media platform. So I think right now it's all about efficiency. I think being good at asking ChatGPT all of a sudden became a huge thing. Right at the speech I just did last week, I opened it up with a job post. There's a job post for a prompt engineer that pays $300,000. Is that crazy? Mm-hmm. There's now jobs. Prompt engineers, the profession. They literally you prompt ChatGPT. That's your job, right? Not only that, there was another job post that I wanted to include, but I didn't. But I have the screenshot. Also, it says prompt engineer, right? Need someone to be good at prompting ChatGPT. We want that person to teach our company how to use it. Everything makes sense. $300,000 also, right? It's like pays more than programming jobs. Anyway, so for that one specifically in the job requirements, it says looking for someone with 12 months ChatGPT experience. ChatGPT has been at 4 months, right? So all of this is like super, super fast moving. It could change, like literally Google tomorrow could say, we'll penalize for AI content and everything will change. But for now, I think it's all about creating efficiencies. We've been testing it for content. We've been testing it for other internal efficiencies. We've been testing it for social media. I think social media is a no-brainer. Responding to reviews, it does really, really, really well. Like, you know, your Google My Business reviews, people manually, like, yep, the best practice is to respond to reviews, negative and positive. Sitting there responding to it, I guarantee you, no matter how much time you spend responding to a review, ChatGPT will do it better. It does, so you literally put in there, ChatGPT, can you respond to this review? Make sure to point out that our service is actually blah, blah, blah. It uses all the content of the review. It does, please test it out. Aside from that, it's just literally learning to use it. And there's no experts out there. I know because everyone thinks I'm an expert and wants me to speak about it, and I'm not, right? I use it myself once in a while. So it's all of a sudden I'm the expert. So that's how I know there's no experts out there. Certainly no experts have been using it for 12 months. But there's really small things that you learn as you use it. For example, and this is the big giveaway for people listening who don't know of this trick. If you ask ChatGPT to respond as an expert, so ask it the same thing you're going to ask anyway, but you say respond as an expert. It actually pulls in more information and spends more time going through all of its data before responding. That's another trick that you get much, 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 much better responses by literally just saying respond as an expert. You could do different ways, by the way. You could say respond as this person, that person, and this different style. I have a really good one for automotive. I say, ChatGPT, write me an article about the history of the Mercedes GLS. Writes an amazing article, really cool information. Then I say, same thing, ChatGPT, write me an article about the Mercedes GLS in the style of Shakespeare. And it literally like writes a poem in the style of Shakespeare about the Mercedes GLS. It's the funniest thing. It's so at the very least, I think all I could say is that everyone should go and play with it, right? It's like, it's free. It's the free version is ChatGPT 3.5. The new one now, 4, you have to pay for. You have to do ChatGPT Plus, which is $20 a month, which is nothing. But even the base version is more than enough for everyone out there. The ChatGPT 4 actually passes all the exams, right? The 3.5 was getting like 70% on the bar exam and everything. ChatGPT 4 is actually getting like 90%. But for almost all use cases, it doesn't make a difference. But I would encourage everyone to go out and at least play with it. The people who do marketing try out having it write posts for your social media posts, Google My Business reviews. People who are coders, programmers, give it some code to fix. Be careful with what you give it though, because anything you give it, you give to ChatGPT, ChatGPT keeps forever, right? Mm-hmm. There's, I don't know if you saw in the news, but there was a big case where someone at Samsung was debugging code, and they could, like, some small code, and they put the entire Samsung code repository to ChatGPT to get ChatGPT to help debug the code. And then ChatGPT now owns the repository, right? And there was like a big thing, and Samsung was reached out to OpenAI, which owns ChatGPT, and they're like, please delete our repository from your internal database. And they're like, that's not how it works. Anything you give to ChatGPT, that's it. Not only does it take it, it learns from it, right? That's the whole way all of this works. The more people that interact with it, the more it learns and the more it takes in. Once you give it something, that's it. There's no backseats. You can't go back and like, please give back our repository. That's not how any of this works. So just keep that in mind. And of course, like anything that's data-based, it's not perfect. And I've seen it give wrong answers. If you want to test it out and see an interesting one, if you go to ChatGPT and ask it what countries start with the letter V, I think I ask, list the countries that start with the letter V. It says there aren't any, right? It says ChatGPT goes, there are no countries that start with the letter V. There's Vietnam, right, and a couple others, but the data set that it has, Vietnam is not Vietnam, right? It's the Socialist Republic of Vietnam or whatever, right? So in its data, it knows that it's not Vietnam. So it says there's no countries that start with the letter V. And by the way, it's gotten better. That's the last example I have left that still works. 2 months ago, I had like 20 examples. The new ChatGPT, they fixed a lot of it. So it's going to get better and better. But of course, you have to vet the information a little bit. I wouldn't just take everything and just as factual. But certainly a lot of uses for it. And I think, like you said, I don't think it's going to replace anyone. People who don't know it and refuse to use it, I think will ultimately be replaced. Or maybe the other way around, people who do use it are going to be more efficient and effective at their job. And I do think the ChatGPT operators positions are going to go away. I think that's a fad. I don't think that's going to become a huge industry, especially now what's the new one? Automated ChatGPT, or I forget what it's called, where you don't need to prompt it. The idea is that in a couple of months, it could prompt itself. You just ask anything and it'll prompt itself correctly, right? This prompt engineer just exists in this short period of time for now. But I think it's super powerful and everyone should go out and play around with it. And if you go on YouTube and search Alex Mellon ChatGPT, I did a 1-hour webinar on it, I think a month ago, not 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. You know, you share a lot about ChatGPT, about AI, and you told that you're not an expert, but you know a lot about AI because I see you tested. And, you know, yes. Once I spoke with Fabrice Canel from Bing, and I asked about AI content, and he told me Bing doesn't care. It's written by human or AI. Bing cares about quality. So if you can create quality content, then Bing will rank this content. I think it's the same with Google, because Google changed the policy, and you can use, but use it right, not overuse. It's not like to ask, please write a new article about weight loss. Yeah, you need to use the right prompts, you need to edit, to spend time, not overusing. It's more about using the right way. Yeah.
That's yeah, why, Google came out with a blog post about it, and they're like I forget where they posted, but they're like internal update that I think February 2nd or something like that. That exactly that. They said that we don't care how the content's created, as long as it continues to follow all the best practices, quality, authenticity, all of that. I still think that's gonna change. I think what's gonna happen is, so right now ChatGPT has 100 million users, right? It was the fastest platform to reach 100 million users ever, right? TikTok did it in 9 months. It was groundbreaking. I think Instagram was 18 months. ChatGPT did it in 2 months. And the users of ChatGPT aren't the TikTok, like, 12, 14 year olds, they're just scrolling through it, right? People using ChatGPT it's a lot more of a difficult product to grasp, to understand. In any case, they have 100 million users, right? If 100 million, and I've been using this example, history of the Mercedes GLS in a couple of speeches I did. if a million people go and ask ChatGPT for an article on the history of GLS, right, and everyone throws it on their website and everyone has a very similar article, ultimately that's not going to rank well. So I think eventually, like anything I've seen in the digital space over the last 30 years, once it gets abused, I think they'll have to either point out that's machine learning content or something's going to have to change, right? And it's my first company I started was free web hosting. And if you or anyone watching have been involved in the tech space all the way back to the mid-90s, that was like the Tripod, GeoCities, Hypermart, those kind of companies, right? It was groundbreaking thinking back then that anyone could create a website on the internet instantly and free. That was a big thing. Because before all of that, and the company I started actually predates GeoCities. So it was really the groundbreaking point of all that. But before we started that kind of technology, if you wanted to make a website, you'd have to call your internet service provider, if you had internet, or your phone service provider, like Bell Atlantic at the time before it became Verizon. Say you want a website, pay them like tens of thousands of dollars, wait 6 to 9 months, and they would make you a website on the internet. That's the way it would be, right? With free hosting, it was revolutionary. Everyone started making website. It was wild, wild west, but it was really, really cool times. Guess what happened? All those companies are out of business. I don't know of any major free web hosting provider still around. The reason it happened, it got abused. It was all fine for a couple of years. And then all of a sudden, everyone's like, shit, I can instantly make anything I want accessible anywhere in the world. So you had all the scammers, all the frauds, like, and unfortunately, everything changed. We went to paid hosting, as even if it's GoDaddy sells it for like 99 cents, but as long as it's something, because you get the credit card information, then you prevent fraud, right? So I think similarly with all of this, once a million people have the exact same AI-generated content on their website, how does Google determine which of those 1 million duplicates to rank higher or lower? Maybe link building becomes more important, right? Then your authority ranking becomes more important. I don't know, but I could have sworn before Google came out and Microsoft and said that they're all treated equally, I could have sworn that they were going to start like highlighting it in results, like just highlight that's machine generated content. But we'll see. I think quickly moving that now that I finished that my search marketing book, I've had a lot of people suggest I write a book on ChatGPT because I speak about it a lot and everything now. But I was like, anything I write now, by the time it gets published in 6 months, will be like completely wrong. Like it's moving so much quicker than anything else before that, like even if I take like guesses and try to cover my bases with different stuff, it's the chance of me like being correct 6 months from now is just so little.
Yeah, nice, great points. Yeah, I agree. You know, I see when content creators care about uniqueness, you know, when they generate content on ChatGPT, check out uniqueness 100%. But it's not about this uniqueness, it's more about uniqueness of context, you know, because it's like, you know, for example, when I ask my friends about a new movie to get this review, and I often get reply, nothing special, I watched the same plot many times, the same movies. I think it's the same with content. If you cheat these tools that will share 100%, you can cheat Google, you can cheat people, because people can find totally the same content in the top 10. So it's not unique, it's not nothing special. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And Alex, my final question about your experience, because I have some students in my network who are looking for a way how to learn SEO from scratch today when we have AI, when we have this technology. Can you tell, if you started today from scratch without any experience, knowledge, skills, what will you do to learn more about SEO?
Yes, I think it's still possible, and I see companies starting from scratch and still doing it. It's what can I say? It's more risky to start a career in SEO today than it was 5 months ago, just because of ChatGPT. I think that is the major disruptor, right? If it all of a sudden everyone is using AI chatbots instead of Google search, that will change the industry. But I think good start. not to promote my own book, but a good start is learning about Google's ranking signals, which I have in my book, but you can also find online. I think fully understanding what's important to Google is the first start, and then you could reverse engineer everything else. And I would encourage people not to just duplicate what other agencies are doing, what other people are doing, because in a lot of cases, I see agencies doing SEO from 15 years ago, right? I think the most important thing is to fully understand Google's perspective and what they value. And Bing, of course, is going to become bigger now, but Bing usually just mirrors Google, at least it has in the last decade. To fully understand what's important to Google and what's driving their ranking signals. And I think once you fully understand that, you could develop a product around it, right? And you don't have to attack all the bases, right? Because you have a local pack, you have Google Map results, right? You have the organic local organic results. Those themselves are separate. Each one needs different things. Then if you just look at the organic results, disregard map for now, you have content creation, link building, technical SEO. You have so many items. You don't really have to necessarily do all of it, right? You could really specialize in one thing, or you could do all of it and specialize in one industry. You could become the go-to person for dental SEO, right? I think either way, you either go general and specialize in a piece of SEO, or do all of SEO and really specialize on an industry. But again, I think first you have to really learn what's important to Google, the ranking signals, and really think about your value add. Like when you're selling your service, what is your value add? How are you creating value for the customer? I think once you figure that out, everything else will come a lot easier.
Nice. Love it. Awesome. Alex, it's a big pleasure to get on my show, to learn from you. Tell our audience the best way how to keep learning from you, how to follow you, how to reach out to you, and how to read your book.
Yeah, perfect. Yes. So if you go to alexmelen.com, alexmelen.com, I have all my information. In the bottom, I have all my social media platforms. I'm most active on LinkedIn these days and probably Twitter, but I'm on all the platforms. So definitely connect with me and reach out. More than happy to help anyone who needs help with anything.
Nice. Guys, you can find the link to the website in the description below to LinkedIn account. Listen to us on Apple, Google, Spotify. Thanks again for your time. I love it. So valuable. You know, you always lead me to an emergency room where I need to spend time to consume all this information, you know, to think how I can adapt and create the best strategy for my agency, for my clients. Okay, guys, thanks a lot for listening and watching us.